Andrew, have you ever suspected that your children might be plotting on you?
I mean, I'm pretty sure they are all the time.
Well, then maybe you're just more experienced than I am, and I'm just getting to the point where I have to start being concerned about my children plotting on me, because tonight was definitely one of those times when everyone was just strangely, interestingly calm and very nice tonight. Everybody ate food the way they're supposed to. It was incredible. However, I'm super suspicious that they're plotting against us secretly. I don't know how to prepare myself for it. What do your children do when they plot against you?
I don't know. I mean, you just kind of have to roll with it.
You just have to live in constant fear of your children?
Yes, because I mean, they're always planning something, even if it's against it's probably more of against each other in my house.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. My children aren't old enough to really plot against each other, so we really just have to worry about them plotting against us. However, follow-up question. Have you ever suspected that the internet is plotting against you, Andrew?
I mean, I don't know if they're directly after me, but I might as well assume that they are.
That's the way we should live in today's society. Be constantly afraid of everything and constantly afraid of the internet. And that's kind of sort of what we're going to be talking about today, is how to protect yourself against the oogie boogies and the scaries that are on the internet. So join us in just a minute right here on the Dad.io podcast. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Andrew.
And we are two guys navigating fatherhood in a digital society.
Life supplies the inputs.
And we supply the outputs.
I'm Stephen John Drew from the official GunnaGeek.com show, a weekly geek news podcast that is a part of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And we are back. We're back in 2019, Andrew. We skipped ahead in time. We went ahead and we went without the DeLorean, and we made it. We made it all the way here. We're here in the future.
Yeah. We are partying like it's 2019.
That's a good Prince reference. I like that. That was good, Andrew. I mean, I feel like there's more to party about these days. We're a little late. We should say that we're a little late to the party, actually. I feel like the party began
20 years ago.
Exactly. We're a little late to the party. We are, for the first time ever, we're a week late getting a show out, because January has been very difficult. I feel like I haven't even talked to you forever since like New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it's been a while.
We, our household was hit by the sick bug. So there was one week where I had it for a couple days, and then the kids just sort of like slowly passed it from one to the other. And we've had doctor's visits followed by last week was just drug through the mud the entire week. I could probably count on both hands the number of hours I actually slept last week. It was brutal. I don't know about you. Maybe your weeks have been better kicking off 2019 than mine. I hope that they were. Mine's been a little rough.
I mean, they were pretty good up until about today.
What happened today, Andrew?
Well, on my way to work, I hit a deer for the first time.
You know what? That's a pretty prestigious club in Ohio. I have to say, it doesn't happen very often at all. I don't ever hear about people in Ohio hitting deer.
Well, right now, I guess in the midst of everything, I am hoping that there is not as much damage as there could be.
I mean, I saw the pictures. It didn't look too terrible. It looked like the front end was pretty jacked up, but it mostly didn't see like that there was a lot of internal damage. Is there anything like major that you could kind of tell right off the bat, or?
There's a lot of cosmetic stuff up front, but the radiator is bent back a little bit, and I don't know what's kind of hidden under that, and I can't quite open the hood without prying it up, and I haven't ventured that far yet.
Okay, look.
So I'm going to wait and see what the estimate comes back tomorrow from the body shop.
It's just the hood, though. You don't need to get into the hood of your car. What are you like? Are you a car person, Andrew? Do we do car stuff? I don't know anything. I mean, maybe I'm speaking for myself. I don't know jack diddly about cars. I
changed my own headlights.
That in and of itself is impressive. I have done that before and it sucks. That is one of the one of the few household things that I would totally just rather farm that one out and just pay somebody to put headlights in for me, because I did do it in one car and it was miserable. And I helped you do it in your car and it was miserable. There's, because they don't make any easy way to get into your car to replace those yourselves. They make them the most complicated, like, hidden treasure object to find in your vehicle to change something as monotonous as a headlight.
Yes, it is a little crazy. I guess that's kind of our dad moment of the week and dealing with life and whatever life throws at you.
Life has thrown a lot at us. We have been trying to record this very episode for at least a week, I think, maybe longer.
I think it's going on about three right now, because we wanted to try to get ahead a little bit.
So. Well, we didn't end up getting ahead, but we are getting the first episode out. So I do apologize that it was kind of on me that we didn't get last week's episode out on time. Just everything that could possibly really go wrong has gone wrong. And then, like, when we did have free time, I just wanted to sleep. And I can't sugarcoat that, Andrew. There's just times when we got to the end of the day and I'm just like, I have nothing left in me.
Fine. Cause there was a couple nights. It's like, I think Ryan said we might try to record tonight, but I really don't want to.
All right. Well, at least we were on the same page on that one then, that we were both just, you know, we both had our struggles over the last few weeks, but regardless, we've made it to the first episode 2019 for the Dad.io podcast. We've got exciting things going on and big plans for the future. And one of those things starts right now that we kind of teased with our last episode of 2018, that crummy old year of 2018. And that is talking about security. And this is a sort of pet interest that I have had over the last probably about 6 months now. I've been super fascinated in digging into the ways that security is not only mismanaged by the majority of people, but the ways that we can all improve and kind of the simple, easy things that we can do to make ourselves a lot more secure online. And then also good security measures that we can pass on to our children or implement for our children now that it's just things that you would never even think about.
I know when I was starting on the internet, I would have never thought about half of this stuff. And I think this is good that we, as the parents, need to adopt these good practices and then to pass these along to our children. Because the more and more technology gets out there, the more and more the dangers can be.
And I'm glad that you kind of started with that too, because that's kind of where I think that we have to start with this, because just to put it into perspective, do you remember like the first thing that you ever did on the internet? What was like the very first thing? Do you remember like the first web page? Do you remember like the first, you know, viral video? What was like your earliest internet video?
For viral video, I was out there before viral videos. I don't really remember those too much. Those came a little later, and I was almost to the point where, like, what's a viral video? Like, after it was like way too late.
Andrew, you are too cool. I remember viral videos. I remember being in high school.
Yes, but I was always late to the game on that stuff. I guess that's what it comes down to.
So what do you think was your first, like, what was like your earliest, your memory? And to get even more specific, do you remember like the first service or like the first website that you signed up for?
Well, I can think of two. Of course, we grew up in the age of dial-up internet. So I remember our parents, we had Prodigy. That was all part of it. But I remember signing up for a GeoCities account and setting up a website there.
Oh, man. I bet it is full of colors and flashing GIFs.
Yeah, I went back to try to find something and I couldn't even find any remnants of it after the fact. And the other thing I signed up for that I remember was Juno free email.
Oh, man. See, you are old school, because I think that I was a little bit after Juno. My family didn't have internet in our house until, I mean, I would guess I was kind of, in my eyes, I guess I was late to the game getting internet. The earliest thing that I remember signing up for was probably a Hotmail email account. Don't remember. Do you remember your first email? Do you remember what your first email address was?
Yes. SouthPark186@juno.com.
That's beautiful, Andrew. I did not expect that at all.
Yes.
So if anybody out there wants to email Andrew at his personal email address, there you go.
I mean, if like no one's checking that as far as I know, and I don't even think Juno is still around.
I'm sure it's probably been bought and sold and repackaged and repurposed, and it's probably like a a funny GIF website or something now. I'm sure it probably still exists, but not in the same form that it was at one time. Same thing with Hotmail. I still laugh whenever I see clients or anything like that who have a Hotmail email address that they give to us in like in a professional setting. I always crack up laughing. So I'm like, man, you know what? You chose a route and you stuck with it because I wouldn't think you would see it that often anymore, but there are still a ton of people who I see on a regular basis using Hotmail as their internet, as their email provider. And that blows my mind.
Yeah, I'm surprised that stuff's still out there because I know Microsoft has pretty much shut down Hotmail and tied it in with their Outlook service. And it's just kind of out, it's gone as far as I know.
I don't think that you can actually sign up for a Hotmail account anymore. I know at one point it was just at mail.com and now it's at outlook.com. And I don't know, it's been passed around a lot. But the whole point that I'm trying to get back to is that, so if we think back to like those very early things that we signed up for, if you were, do you know like roughly what age you were? Probably like maybe what, like 15, 14?
Yeah, 14, 15.
I want to say that that was roughly the age that I was because I signed up for my first email account when I was at elementary school and like they had internet in the classroom and on recess during the winter, you were allowed to use the computers. And I remember signing up for an email account then. And I guarantee that at the time, that they were still asking for the same type of information that they ask for nowadays. Only 20 years ago at this point, it was a heck of a lot less secure than what it is today. So all of those sites and all of those services that we've signed up for over the years, and I don't know about you, but mine probably ranks somewhere close to in the hundreds of different websites and different stupid things that I have willingly given my information away to for just the most measly and pathetic returns in my favor as a result. All of that stuff is still out there in one form or another. And if you think about Hotmail, you think about Juno and the number of times that they've been bought and sold and transformed into different things, even though Hotmail, like Microsoft has always owned that, the amount of times that that information has potentially been leaked or that information has been hacked, that stuff happens almost, you know, I won't want to say daily. I'm sure that probably it happens daily in terms of things that we don't hear about or maybe things that don't directly impact us. But that stuff happens so frequently anymore that we've kind of become a little lazy and we've kind of become a little complacent to it.
Because yeah, there's been a couple big hacks this year or within the last year. You had the Equifax one.
That was huge.
Or Experian. I can't remember. It's one of those.
It was Equifax and somewhere in the neighborhood of it was in millions of people. I want to say it was somewhere close to 2 or 3 million people had their information. It may have even been more than that. Because again, like that's one that it was in the back of my head, but you don't realize how large a data breach like that actually is.
But the next one I was getting at was there was a big breach. I believe it was Marriott Hotels. They had a big breach not that long ago. And I think that ranked as the number one biggest breach. And it's basically like if you stayed at a Marriott hotel, people have your information.
And if you think about the number of hotels that Marriott even owns under that brand, chances are if you've stayed at a hotel somewhere in this country within the last 15 years, that's been online and you've given that information out.
And that's something like, as you're talking about signing up for these services, we never think about giving our information away to a hotel provider to that our information would be stolen or whatever. But how many times have we signed up for a service online and just forget about it after using it twice?
And what you just said, that is one of the things that I really want to draw attention to with this is that there are so many throwaway opportunities that we have to just willy-nilly give our information away for, again, nothing in return or something very meaningless in return. to the point that it is so easy anymore for someone, if they are trying to find information about you, that they can do it. It's scarily easy. And in our next episode, we're going to talk about that specifically, about how easy it is to get information on someone, or how easy it would be for someone to get information on you if they really wanted it. It is insultingly simple. And the major reason why is because of the frivolous way that we've used our information recently. And the fact that so many websites that you sign up for, if you look at Facebook, is kind of the biggest one that comes to mind. And they're kind of the most notorious, especially over the last year, the number of scandals and the number of just awful use of our information that they have been involved with. You know, when you sign up for a website like that, you're not signing up really as for a service. You're signing up to be a product, because your information is the thing that they want from you. And they are taking that and they are selling it to the highest bidder for, generally, it's for advertisements. That's the biggest thing that we see. And in the grand scheme of things, that's probably the least concerning thing that happens with your information.
I know that whenever you sign up for these services like Gmail, it's always a transaction of something. It's not really a monetary transaction. But if you're getting a service like Gmail, like the free email provider with 15 gigabytes or whatever they're offering now, you're providing something to them. And to them, that is information from your email or where your emails are coming from to provide better ad tracking or better targeted ad towards you.
And
the same thing goes with Facebook. And when you sign up for that stuff too, is you are making a transaction there. It's not a monetary transaction. It's you're giving your personal data over to them to let them know what's going on, because they're tracking your location and other stuff like that if you have that turned on. And you are providing them that information for better targeted ads towards you, just to be able to use their Facebook service of connecting with people.
And I would argue that it actually is a monetary transaction. It's just a monetary transaction that's not in your favor in any way.
Well, it's like you're not paying anything for that service. That's kind of what I'm saying. But they are making money off of that by providing you that free service.
Absolutely. And again, the big picture stuff here, you can be concerned about, and you have every right, and I don't think that anyone is wrong if they tell you that they're, you know, that they don't want to be have their information used to have advertisements targeted at them. And it's not really something that we can escape anymore. And one thing that I like to bring up, and this is something that came out of the research and kind of one of the many things that you don't think about, but has a big impact. So you have, especially in the generation, and like our parents' generation, the baby boomer generation, that are very much, or they kind of have this false security that they think that because they have not been online as long as the rest of us, that their information is more safe, or that they are less susceptible to the targeted advertisements and less susceptible to, you know, the data mining and these kind of things. In reality, they're the most susceptible, and they're the ones that these people are actually going after specifically. But if you think that your information's safe because you have not been online very long, or maybe you've been very cautious and very careful about the way that you use your information and the way that you give it away, there are so many things that you don't realize already has that and is already selling it. And the prime example is if you go to the grocery store, if you go to Walgreens or CVS or Kroger's or any of these stores that have a like a customer or shopper's card, which pretty much every store has one now. And the primary reason why is because you are giving them your information in exchange for, you know, 20 cents off of a gallon of milk or something stupid or whatever like their specials are that they only give you if you have that card. And the reason why is because they're tracking everything that you purchase with that card. And then that way, when they are targeting advertisements to you, when you sign up for their online service, or when they send you mailers through the postal service, you're getting coupons and you're getting advertisements targeted specifically to you based on things that you purchased with your preferred shopper's card. And it's the exact same thing. It's the exact same sacrifice that you're giving to those stores in exchange for that, that you are giving to Facebook, or you're giving to Google, or whoever else it is that you're giving that stuff away to.
Well, I've even heard that some of those grocery stores or other companies like that are tying your shopping habits to your credit card number. And then you're not reaping any of those benefits as well.
There's a whole multitude of things that gets tied into that. And there's a whole multitude of scary stuff that happens with your information after the fact. There are companies that exist solely to basically repackage or resell your information to other people who want it. It's pretty simple. If we really wanted to, Andrew, we wanted to find out where somebody was at. It's pretty darn simple to get in touch with the right people or get in touch with the right companies now that basically specialize in digital stocking, more or less.
Yeah, and I do think there are ways, if you wanted to get full like conspiracy theory, you could go completely off the grid. But in the technology, in the society today, with the technology that we have, that's almost a detriment to us and our kids to do it that way. So we have to develop these secure practices to move forward.
So that was another thing that I had looked into with this too, was finding out, okay, at this point for me, is it possible for me to go off the grid? Could I remove everything offline that I've ever done?
I would say at that point, no. It's either you stop it before you get on the grid, like we'd have to stop our kids from doing that. But I think once you make an impression, you can't remove that. Or it's going to be very, very, very difficult.
It is
to get everything.
It is very difficult. It's really, and in all honesty, it's pretty much impossible to get rid of everything. However, just like there are companies that buy your data and sell it to unscrupulous individuals, there are companies that specialize in cleaning up your online presence. It is not cheap. It's very, very expensive. And basically what they do is, let's say that you are involved in some sort of a social media scandal, and we see this stuff happen all the time. You say something real dumb on social media and it gets picked up, it goes viral, and that dumb thing that you said ends up coming back to cost you your job, cost you your marriage maybe, and all these awful things that happen. And it was all because you said something stupid that you shouldn't have said. The internet doesn't forget, and it's always going to remember.
Yeah, and you said it like 10 years ago, and you completely forgot about it.
Exactly. We've seen this happen with celebrities here recently, and in some cases, I understand why, because sometimes there are some certain things that you say that maybe as you start to become more, have a bigger presence in society or a bigger like cultural influence, you might want to go back and try to like clean up that image a little bit. So some of it comes down to just being really dumb and forgetting that stuff is out there.
Yeah. And I think I have a thing here that'll tie us into our next topic is you sign up for one of these smaller services. And I'm pretty sure when we were signing up for that, we used the same password for everything. So when they get hacked or whatever, and they get your password for this service that you forgot about a long time ago, they're going to try using that email and password for a bunch of different services.
We as human beings, Andrew, are not as intelligent as we think that we are sometimes. And we will favor convenience 9 times out of 10. And because of our habit of favoring convenience, it causes us to make really bad choices. And the prime example of that is using your dog's name 123 as a password on 17 or 18 or 70 or 80 different websites without thinking about the repercussions of, oh, well, if somebody ever got my password to one, it's pretty easy to go to all these other websites, use the same email address, and a gross number of us use the same password over and over again on various websites. Have you been guilty of this?
I have, and I've been trying to remedy that over the past year or so to make sure. I got all my important accounts switched over, but there are a few other accounts that I do have a, I guess you would say, less secure password.
I myself have also been very guilty of this, and it did make my hunt through old websites exponentially easier because the majority of them, I already knew the two possibility, like possible passwords that I used eons ago. One of them was just my name. I was that uncreative. Literally just my first and last name. That was the password on a whole bucket load of different websites. So it became very convenient for me to go back and scrub myself off of them, because I knew I wasn't creative that long ago. And I knew that there was only really maybe two or three variations of different passwords that I used. So the first thing that I did when I started this, little journey of self-discovery into the world of cybersecurity was to sign up for a password manager. There's a lot of them out there. They all pretty much do the same thing, and they just different ones have kind of different features. I know there's one that you really like, so I'll let you talk about that one in a sec. The one that I signed up for was 1Pass. Wait a minute. Let me make sure that really is the one. I'm pretty sure that's the one. The one I signed up for was called LastPass. There's so many of them, you get them confused. And I just picked that one because I went online and read some different reviews, and it seemed like they had overwhelmingly positive reviews. Most of these password managers have really good reviews. But the thing that I was also interested in was, you know, what kind of steps do they take to make sure that you're securing that information? Because the way that these work is you have one master password that essentially unlocks every other password that you kind of keep stored in the, you know, it's kind of like a digital wallet basically in the app. And when you go to different websites, instead of putting in the password, the password manager will do it for you. So it's kind of like a handshake that takes place, so that A, you don't have to remember the password, and B, it generates very secure, random capital, lowercase letters, numbers, characters, kind of passwords for you that would be nearly impossible for a person to ever guess, A, and very, very, very difficult for any sort of what they call a brute force hack, which is basically a program that someone can write to go to a website and just try password, password, password after password until it gets the right one. And a lot of, you know, kind of older data breaches were done that way, with people who would write these programs that would just find a username and try millions and millions of variations of passwords until it found one that worked, that kind of unlocked the door and let them in. It's becoming harder to do that. And one of the big reasons why is because we have a better understanding of secure passwords nowadays, and these apps make that so much easier. What's the one that you use, Andrew? I know you've had it for several years and you really like it.
Yeah, the one I use, which, I mean, like you said, they're all pretty similar. And I would say the two that we use are probably the top two. And it's LastPass that you use, and I use 1Password.
See, that's why that one was in my head a minute ago. And these are now, the one that you use, it's a subscription, correct?
Yeah, I think they all are kind of subscription-based now. A lot of these services that you need on a daily basis, I mean, are going to subscription-based. I think you can get a regular license that is not, I'm not for sure. I think they've been phasing that out and trying to push more towards a subscription-based.
LastPass does have a free option, and I believe that the big ones still have a free option, but there's some limitations to what you can do with it. It does everything that I could possibly ask it to do. My absolute favorite feature is that when you go to a website and you're signing up for an account and ask for you to make a password, it just jumps in there and says, hey, here's a good secure password that no one's ever going to guess. Let's use this one. And then it saves it for me in my wallet, and I don't even have to look at it, because I already know that it gave me a really good password. I don't have to remember it. It remembers it for me. And I still get that convenience, but at the same time, I know that I'm secure because I'm taking the convenient way out, more or less.
That's the feature I love too, is where they do the automatic generated passwords. And it's a great thing to have for the families. Me and my wife both have 1Password, and you can share passwords between each other. Like if we have a shared Amazon account, which my wife was yelling at me probably 3 years ago, like, why do you have this absurdly long Amazon password? And she yelled at me several times. I was like, fine, I'll just type it in. You don't have to worry about it. And, but I think she has finally become more, she realized more of what the threats could be, because if someone has your Amazon account, they could go order a couple $1,000 worth of stuff before you even realize it.
They could order a 50-gallon vat of ranch dressing. You'd have no idea until it showed up at your door. And that's a lot of ranch dressing.
Well, I just seen this week, I think it was kind of going viral, a 27-pound bucket of macaroni and cheese that lasts for like 20 years.
I'm down. I would. That would last 27 hours in my house between myself and the kids and my wife. We eat pasta like every day. I'm down for that. So a lot of the paid subscription features, they give you things like that. Same thing for LastPass. If you want to exchange that, like have kind of a shared account with more than one person, you can do that and set those things up. It's simple. And that's the most important thing with these. They're really easy. There's not really an excuse to not have one. And we're not sponsored by any of them or getting any kickbacks or anything like that. So I don't care which one you end up using. Just pick one and use it. And even if you don't want to sign up for an account, some other options that you have, Chrome has this feature built into it now that if you use Chrome on mobile or if you use the Chrome browser, it will automatically do this for you. It stores all your passwords, and they've stored your passwords for you tied to your Google account for years. But now when you go to a website and you have to sign up for an account, they will offer to generate a secure password for you. And once you do that, it saves it to your account. It's there. It's no hassle. It's easy.
Yeah, I think this is starting to get built in a little bit more with all the browsers. I know Safari does it. I'm pretty sure Firefox does it as well. It's just when you sign up for one of these password managers, it just gives you those extra features that allow you to expand later on. Like if you want to get started, you can get started using these features built into your browser. But if you really want to move past that, you'll probably need a password manager, because then you can start also storing other information in there as well. You can store pictures of your passports or your birth certificates, your social security numbers. And those are pretty well encrypted, so you wouldn't have to worry about it unless somebody got your like master password, like password.
Which PSA, make sure that your master password is actually a good one. You really don't ever need to put it in unless you would be signing up like on a new device or something like that. So, I mean, make sure that one's good though. Don't use your crappy old password that you got the password manager to replace on all these websites and then use that one as your one for your master password. That's bad business. Don't do that. It kind of defeats the whole purpose. So just a little PSA there. One other thing that I wanted to bring up too, I will give props to iOS, because I want to say that as terms of mobile technology goes, they have a very seamless and a very flawless way that they tie all of these different services into one another. You can have multiple password managers if you want. And when you go to a website on Safari or on your iOS device for different apps and things, not only can you use your thumbprint to unlock those apps, which Android could do that too, but they give you the option that you can pick, okay, is this stored on your Apple account? Is this stored on LastPass or 1Password? And just go ahead and pull that information into that website. Again, it's all about convenience at the end of the day, but it's about smart convenience. And that's what these are offering you.
Yeah. And I think if you use those password managers now with the phones that have the thumbprint and everything, and even the facial recognition, it's becoming a lot easier to have the password managers take care of that information, because then you're just using your thumbprint to sign into these services instead of actually typing out your password.
Now, technically, from a security standpoint, you don't want to use your thumbprint or your face, because those are physical things that can be replicated. And we're still kind of early on in mobile technology. It's gotten a lot better since it first debuted, but we're still kind of early on, and it's still fairly easy to flub a fingerprint or to flub a facial recognition and trick the device into letting you in. So,
well, I mean, here's a tip. I'm for at least iOS that I know of, that for the most part, you have your thumbprint recognition, and usually you would have a passcode on your phone. Yes, your thumbprint can be replicated, your facial ID, theoretically they can do something, because I know Apple's Face ID was tricked with like twins or something like that. So
it got tricked in like a day. It was gone.
There's ways around that. Somebody could take your phone and try to like snap a picture of your face or whatever with the phone to unlock it. But if you hit the power button 5 times on an iPhone, it will not allow you to do any of that biometric stuff, and you'll have to put in your passcode.
Which is an awesome feature. And Android has the same thing too. They have something similar, and I can't remember what it was. I feel like I've been away from Android for so long now, but they have something similar too, that if you press the power button to lock your device, then that automatically you can bypass that, or you can set it up in the settings to do that. It's a good idea. I'm not going to say that I go that far with it. I still use the thumbprint, even though I am aware of the vulnerabilities that are there. I don't have a phone that does facial recognition, and if I did, I wouldn't even use that because I don't like that. But that's just personal preference. If you're comfortable with it, these security methods are still better than having a crappy password. So
yes,
at the very least, do one of these. The other thing that seems like a no-brainer, but it does bear bringing up, is two-factor authentication. Most websites anymore, and I was surprised by the number that offer this that I wasn't aware of. Websites like Twitter, websites like Facebook, pretty much any email provider anymore offers and encourages you to set up a two-factor authentication. And if you're not familiar with this, basically what this is that you're asking them that if you would ever sign into your account from an unknown device, that they will send you, usually it's a text message to your phone, and have you confirm a like 5-digit PIN number that they send you to verify that you're the one requesting that. Some of them will call you and have like a pre-recorded message that will tell you what the PIN number is. They'll just basically ask you to go one step further than just knowing what your password is, but to also verify that you are present on your device that's requesting it, or you're present on your main device, which is usually your mobile phone anymore, to make sure that you are the one requesting it. It's not very secure anymore, because it's actually shockingly easy for someone to hack your phone number. And going back to the number of websites that we've signed up for over the years, and we have frivolously given away our cell phone number, you don't think about it.
It is pretty easy to do like an SMS spoof of your cell phone number, where they would be able to, I guess, siphon off your text messages. And if a service is sending out a text message as the second authentication method, then yes, they could get that and get into your account. But I know there are a couple other services out there that kind to like Google Authenticator that send it a different way. It doesn't go through the traditional text message route.
So yeah, Google Authenticator is a really cool one, and it's criminally underutilized. I don't ever hear anybody talk about using it.
Yes, I don't use it. And I will say I am guilty of that. Most of my second factor stuff I have set up on a few things is just through SMS.
And again, like it's not very secure anymore. Like Andrew said, there is something called SMS spoofing. It's a rabbit hole that we don't have enough time to really go down, but basically it involves a unscrupulous person calling your phone carrier, claiming to be you, going on your Facebook account to find out that your dog's name is Muffy, and they can pretty easily find your mom's maiden name because she wished you a happy birthday last year. Pretty easy stuff that really a person with like a second grade understanding of the internet can find very easily. And they can basically use that to bypass your security questions that you have in place at your carrier and get them to transfer your mobile number to their SIM card. And then all of a sudden they have access to all of your contacts, all of your text messages, all of your phone calls. And once they have that, they can get into any account that they want, because most accounts, if you forget your password, are just going to send it to your cell phone anyway. So if you have that, you basically have the keys to a person's entire online presence. And anymore, your phone number needs to be secured as secretly and as securely as we secure our social security number. It's that important and is that vulnerable anymore, that everybody has this idea that your social security number is like the last thing, like that's the one thing you have to protect over everything else. Your cell phone number is just as important and unlocks more information and more about you than what your social security number does. Think about it like that, because once you start realizing all the different things that your number is tied to, it gets real scary. If you want to go a step further, than just traditional two-factor authentication. Because like Andrew said, most of us are not using it the way it's intended to be used. And if you don't want to do Google Authenticator, which again, that's a free option. It's super simple to set up. It is not inconvenient, but it does offer an extra layer of protection. But if you do want to go the next step further, you can get what's called a YubiKey. And there's a couple different manufacturers that do the same thing. The most popular one is definitely a company called Yubi, Y-U-B-I. I got one of these a couple months ago, and I wanted to try it out because I wanted to see if having it was an inconvenience. Is it something that I would want to use for the security that it offers, or is it something that I would get into and realize this sucks because it's too much stuff to have to like putting between me and getting to whatever I want really quick, and would I stop using it? And I'm happy to say I've not stopped using it. It is super convenient and it's super cool. It's a little USB drive. I'm pretty sure that like you can run them over with your car. It has a weird, I've never seen anything like it. It's not like a traditional USB thing, or like the pins on it are not like a traditional USB drive. It's cool. It has like a Wi-Fi chip built into it as well. So you can use it with your cell phone, and it uses NFC to just tap on your cell phone to unlock things if it needs to. But basically what you do is you set up that physical key as your two-factor authentication. So if you were to forget your password to say your bank account, or to I set it up like on Twitter. So let's say I forget my password on Twitter. Not only are they going to try to contact me to verify my identity, I cannot get back into my account unless I have that key. If you would lose the key, there are ways that like you can get a new one, but it's very difficult. And it is advised that if you have one, you should probably go ahead and order a second one, because you want to have a spare device that you keep in a closet or in a safe, probably, to have a backup of your original, because it's very, very, very difficult to transfer that stuff for the explicit purpose that you're signing up for, because you don't want that information to be transferable. You don't want anyone to be able to get into those things. And that's the end of the line. That's probably the most secure thing that you're going to be able to do as far as your passwords and your personal information goes. Because again, if somebody does not have that physical key, they cannot get into your account. They cannot change your password. They cannot do anything that should be something that only you would be allowed to do unless they have it. They're about $50. But they do work for mobile. And if you use them on a computer, you can just leave it plugged into your computer if it's at your house or something. And as long as it's plugged in, then it gives you access to all of those websites. And on your phone, it's not going to, if you go to check your email, it doesn't ask you to tap it or anything like that. Every time you check your email, it only asks you if your account was signed out on mobile. So if you lost your phone, you could go to Google or whoever your provider is and tell them that you lost your device, and it will sign you out of it. But if that person tried to get, you know, whoever took your phone, if they tried to get into your email, then it would prompt them that it had to have the YubiKey in order to proceed to get back into that account. Do you have anything? Do you have any other security tips, Andrew? Do you have anything that you're doing that maybe somebody else might want to look into?
Well, there's a few things out there. I guess this is just ways to protect your information. Like if you're going on Facebook, and I know these are shared like every other day, that, oh, this Walt Disney Studios or theme parks are offering 5 free trips to Walt Disney World for you and your entire family. Just share this link and we'll pick our winner tomorrow.
You mean that I'm not going to win a free Disneyland trip? Is that what you're telling me?
All of those are just scams. I looked at one of them, and I looked at their profile. It said Walt Disney World. That they had the same logo as Walt Disney World. The only difference is in their username or their way that their thing was, that there was a period at the end.
Nice, nice. I'm surprised that Disney has not sued them into oblivion by this point.
Well, I mean, there's other ones out there for Disney. There's those things that, oh, you share this link, you get a $200 Kroger gift card or a Kohl's gift card. You just have to share this and we'll pick our 50 winners tomorrow. Those are all scams. They're just trying to get after your personal information, because there's certain things that if you share a link, those companies can get some of your information.
At the end of the day, what it all comes down to is don't be dumb. If it seems too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true, and you shouldn't give away your social security number and birthday and telephone number and home address and mother's maiden name just to get an entry into some ridiculous thing that, again, sounded way too good to be true. And it's really just like a 12-year-old kid that's sitting on their computer just hacking all your informations. It's taking all of them. Got your credit card number. They're going to go buy some Legos and some Minecrafts. I don't know what kids are into these days. I don't know what, like,
Fortnite. It's Fortnite. It's all about Fortnite.
I mean, well, yeah. I play Fortnite too. Like, I haven't for a while, but I'm into that, Andrew. So I'm cool enough to understand that, but I don't know what, like, the younger kids are into. I mean, I don't know. They're probably into that too. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and to get back on that, there's another service that I personally signed up for. I was like, this isn't going to work. This is like, I just kind of want to see how far this gets. And I believe it was this, I seen an ad on Facebook or like Instagram or one of those social networks. It's get it free. And on this video, they're showing this person unboxing this toolkit of like a $50 tool, like screwdriver set. And they're opening up like a $30 this. And it's like, oh, if you sign up and like to our survey platform, whatever, you can get all this stuff free. You just have to sign up and give us a whole bunch of information about you. So I went through that whole step. It was ridiculously long. I don't remember all the stuff that I've given. It wasn't too crazy.
I got to stop you. Wait. Did you at least give fake information?
You gave real
information, didn't you, Andrew? You gave real information.
I gave them my address because they were going to ship something to me.
I am so disappointed in you.
A lot of the other information I did make up. Like, I can't even remember it all because I got a little skeptical here, but I was like, they're saying they're going to send me something. So I have to at least give my address. And I was thinking, for the most part, your address is public record. If somebody really wanted to find it out, your address is public record.
Okay.
And so I was going through that and they ended up sending me like a 50-cent screwdriver at the end.
And it's just filled with asbestos too. You know it is. I hope that you put it in a closet or something. The first time you use that, you're just going to get a rash everywhere, Andrew. It's just going to be rashes everywhere.
How do you get a rash from a screwdriver?
Because it probably came from like the worst Chinese sweatshop imaginable. Like the conditions are terrible. Like, you know, it's just asbestos everywhere, Andrew. That's what I've been told. Okay. And I believe everything that the internet tells me. So I believe that. Okay. But I don't believe this thing that you signed up for. However, you just gave me a beautiful idea for how we're going to segue into our second episode on this. We're going to keep in mind what you just said. Because you said that, like, you made up the other information, but you gave away your address because that's public record. We're going to keep that in mind as we segue into our next episode, Andrew, that you said that, because I want to take that. I want to be a hacker, Andrew. And I want to see if I just had your public address, because that's easy. No, I can't do anything with that. I'm going to see how much information can I find out about you strictly through I have your address. How much do you think I can get, Andrew? And I'll have you verify. We'll bleep it all out and everything. But I want to see, because like, some of the stuff like I know about you, but our audience is not going to also know that like my memory is the worst thing ever. So like I can't remember your parents' names or anything like that. But we're going to see. We'll bleep it all out and keep it secure. But this is a beautiful jumping off point for that mentality of, I gave away my address, but everybody already has that. What are they going to do with that? I'm going to show you, Andrew. I'm going to show you. I'm going to blow your mind on the next episode. I'm going to show you how much information that you can get with just having someone's address like that. It's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. And you just gave it away. Just threw it out there for an asbestos-filled screwdriver, Andrew. It's going to break the first time you use it. It's like the Wish app, okay? Like, yeah, the stuff is great because it's 15 cents, but then you get it. And it's like cardboard in like old Cheerios that they've mashed together to form. I don't know. I've bought stuff. I bought a belt off of the Wish app, and it was my favorite belt I've ever owned because it lasted like 3 years before it fell apart. So I'll give them that. Okay. But you just got a screwdriver. Did you use it yet? Do you love that screwdriver, Andrew? Is it worth it? Was it worth it?
No, it was kind of worth it for the laugh because I was like, really, this is what I got. Like, okay, this is what I was expecting, but.
You really thought you were going to get like the Craftsman, like 50 tool set master chest thing, didn't you?
No, I was not. I was like, but maybe. and that's how they get you.
Yeah, they, I will say, Andrew, that they really do play on everyone's stupidity, that they think they're going to be the one that gets that thing.
Yeah, free stuff will get you to give your information away. The offer of free stuff will let you give your information away. And I think that's kind of a detriment to a lot of people. And like, I kind of fell for it, but I was like, wait a second, this isn't right.
you thought that you were going to outsmart them too. So again, we're going to pick up there with our next episode. And I'm going to take your address, Andrew, because you gave that to me as the hacker person that got you to sign up for this thing. And we're going to see how much information can I find out about you strictly from your address. I don't know anything else about you. We're going to see how much I can dig up, Andrew, and then I'll have you verify it on the next episode if I am correct.
Okay, we will see it. I am a little skeptical because I don't know how hackery you can be, but we'll see.
That is challenge accepted, Andrew. I am insulted right now. So challenge accepted. So that's what we're going to pick up on our next episode. We're going to see how much I can dig up by Andrew strictly by using his address. And we'll go from there. And we'll go and we're going to round about this, or we're going to bring this whole discussion on internet security full circle on the next episode here. I think we're at a good stopping point, though. We've covered a lot. Tried to keep it easy, not get too down the rabbit holes. But it is a topic that is worth talking about, and is a topic that is so worth taking a few minutes or an afternoon to go back and look at some of the things that you've signed up for, and look at how your information is being used, and find out how much of your information is out there, and find out what's being done with it too, because it's scary. And I'll put a couple websites in the show notes. Have you been pwned, which most people know about. You can put in your email address, and it'll tell you if your email address was involved in any of the big hacks over the last several years. Namecheck.com is a one that you can put in like your email address or your username, and it will tell you the hundreds of stupid websites that you have used your handle or your email address on over the years. And then it can help you go to those websites and get that information removed or get those accounts closed. I'll leave all that information in the show notes. If you have any questions, or you have any maybe tidbits or any stories that you want to share with us about how these things have affected you, you can reach out to us on Twitter at Dat.io Podcast, or you can also check out the Discord service for the Going to Geek Network, which, Andrew, you know that one offhand.
Yeah, goingtogeek.com/Discord.
Go engage with us there, because we have a lot of fun discussions on not only the security stuff. I'm sure that's going to be a new one that we're going to, you know, dive into here, but also on home automation things, which is like the other big Dat.io thing that we were always talking about, is home automation stuff. And the Discord server has been a breeding ground of ideas for home automation stuff. All right. Well, join us here in 2 weeks for another episode of the Dat.io Podcast. For this week, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Andrew.
Have a lovely weekend.